The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 526. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. My guest is the man behind Vantage In-House Productions and the creator of some awesome independent comics as well. I'm talking about Mr. Victor Dandridge Jr., and I'm really excited to have Victor back on because, believe it or not, it's been a while, and in fact, when he and I ran into each other at GalaxyCon here in Columbus, I think in December, we both lamented that we needed to, you know, get back together and do another episode, and so you're going to hear about all the new things going on in Victor's life as he's got a new position. With a new group, with a arts council, and I'm going to let him fill in all the blanks, but it certainly is an interesting tale, and we're always going to talk comics as well, and so we're going to talk about some of his past projects as well as some of his future projects. But before you hear my conversation with Victor, I got to let you know about a great sponsor of the PVD Cast. I'm talking about Courtney 614 Deals. If you need great deals on women's fashion, health and beauty, and a myriad of other products, then look no further than Courtney 614 Deals. You can find her on all the major reselling sites like Whatnot, Poshmark, eBay. You simply just have to look for Courtney, spelled C-O-R-T-N-E-Y, 614 Deals, and you'll get to see all of the great stuff that she has available for sale. So once again, I'd like to thank Courtney 614 Deals for her support. And if you pick up anything from her, please let her know that you heard about her endeavors right here on the PVD Cast. All right, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Victor Dandridge Jr. Ladies and gentlemen, I am sitting down this evening with a man that hasn't been on the show in a number of years. Four, to be exact.
Has it been 4 years?
It's been 4 years. I looked it up, yeah. Okay. Anyways, he's the hardest working man in comics. He's the man behind Vantage In-House. This is Victor Dandridge Jr. Victor, how you doing, man?
Good, man. I'm good. How have you been?
I've been doing well. You know, just staying busy. Yourself?
Definitely the same. the hardest working man in comics thing took like a level up last year, and in a real big bad way. I've been very, very lucky in my career, and the new wave of things that I've been on has been wonderful for where I'm trying to go in life.
Well, let's talk about it, because the last time we saw each other was GalaxyCon in December. We chatted a little bit. Of course, I follow you online, man, so I know the ins and outs of what's going on in your world, I think, you know.
We've had a couple things happen.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the big change in your professional life.
So, obviously, 2025 was a big year for me, where I celebrated 15 years of my publishing imprint, Vantage In-House Productions. And what's crazy is, like, looking back on it, like, starting that was nutty, right? Like, I was working for the state of Ohio, and one does not quit a cushy state job to make funny books for a full-time living. But I did, because that's who I am. That's who I was. And for my 15-year anniversary celebration, I had applied for, no, I was headhunted. Let me say it specifically. I was headhunted, applied for, and got a new role as Deputy Director of Operations for Noblesville Creates, which is a arts resource nonprofit based in Noblesville, Indiana. So I uprooted my entire existence from Columbus, Ohio, where I was born and raised, and moved 3 hours west to Noblesville, Indiana, to take on this new role as Deputy Director of Operations. And it has been phenomenal. Like, I can't even tell you how much more of myself I feel in this role. There were a lot of things that I was doing through my You Create Comics line that I was running into roadblocks all the time in Columbus. Like, couldn't get into schools like I wanted to. The closest thing that I had was a tentative deal through Columbus City Schools through the summer of 2020. And we all know what happened in 2020. That was going to be a game changer, but obviously COVID ruined all of that. And in a weird sort of way, like, there were so many different kind of bureaucratic things that I didn't understand how to get around and navigate through. And in my new position, I am the bureaucracy. So now I'm learning all the things that I needed to know in Columbus that I had no clue to know. Now I'm learning those things firsthand because that is me now. So it's been huge, huge as an opportunity.
So can you describe to us a little bit about what your job is, what a typical day is in the life of Victor with his new position?
Of course. So I have this wonderful historic building that I like to work in. We have a campus. It's got two buildings on it. One is called the Judge Stone House. The other one's called Stevenson Gallery. This Judge Stone House is one of the oldest buildings here in Noblesville. Noblesville has a very, like, it's on the northeast side of Indianapolis. Like, it's like a suburb of Indianapolis. And it has, like, a very quaint sort of, like, Hallmark town feel to it. And the Judge Stone House is one of the oldest ones. I like to work in the Stevenson building. It's got a beautiful gallery on the first floor. That's where I mostly work. And basically, I am heading up day-to-day operations on campus, as well as managing the 5 signature events that my nonprofit puts on, as well as organizing other events that other featured partners are putting together. So I'm very much so, like, hands on the, on, you know, hands on projects, boots on the ground, talking things up in a place that I am not from. So it's been like a requirement that I get to know more people and actively talk to folks and introduce myself. And obviously I'm super shy. Anyone that's ever met me knows that that's, you know, I'm such a wallflower and introvert. That's a total lie, people. If you don't know, I'm very comfortable with talking. As you can tell from these first like 6 minutes. But no, like it's been like one of those things where like I just get to be creative in places, be strategic in places, and really try to see how we can better impact the local community as well as the county region, because we're kind of the like arts agency for the county, Hamilton County to be specific. So like we're working with Noblesville, Fishers, Carmel, Westfield, and just kind of expanding, you know, what it means to be creative, to be an artist, and what kind of economic impact that can have both in businesses, for creatives, and everywhere that we, you know, set our sights on.
Well, I guess we do have to maybe talk a little bit about your personal life too, because this has impacted your family.
Oh yes. My loving family, like it's so funny too, because everyone that knows that I've got kiddos are like, wait, where are your kids at? So funny enough, like my sons are all grown. Right. So my oldest is 23 and it's 23, 22, 20. The 20-year-old he's on a full ride scholarship to University of Indianapolis. So UIND, about an hour south of where I am now. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to come out here, because I could be close to him if he needed something. He's not quite, you know, at that I'm grown age, but he's close. And I'm kind of in that like perfect go-between spot where if he needs to get away for it a little bit, I'm just an hour away, but he can still be close to the school if he needs to. If he's got, you know, any sort of issues, he can come to me. My daughters, though, are in a very precarious place. My daughters are still in school. My oldest is a junior in high school, and obviously moving her out would be traumatic, right? She got her friends. She got all these, you know, great relationships that she's got back home. But the other thing is she's in this amazing bridge program where she will graduate from high school with an associate's degree from Columbus State. There is no logical way that I could presume to pull her out of that. Like, no way whatsoever. I'm like, that's too good of an opportunity. Especially once Columbus State and OSU started their bridge program that says that if you graduate from Columbus State with a associate's degree, you can finish up 2 years for your bachelor's at OSU for free. And I'm like, listen, baby, I love you, but you not only should, like, you have to stay there, but you kind of have to be a Buckeye too. Like, it's the smartest thing ever. You'll be, you know, 20 years old, technically 19, like, with a bachelor's degree and no debt. And in the economy that we're in right now, I'm like, I'm sorry, that's the smart move. Like, I need you to lock in and do that. And she's like, yeah, no, I didn't want to leave anyway. I'm like, I know you didn't want to leave. I was just trying to sell it to myself to make me feel better. Like, I was making the decision. I knew you didn't want to leave. And then my youngest daughter is in a French immersion school. And there are no French immersion schools here in Noblesville. I haven't found a French immersion school in Hamilton County yet. So she would technically be behind, because in a French immersion school, you're technically learning English as like a second language. And what I can tell you, like, without any shaming my daughter whatsoever, her spelling, her phonetic spelling isn't great for English. In French, she's phenomenal. She's dominant. She's amazing. She's a great French speaker. But if it came to, you know, her having to go to an English-only school, she would immediately be rated as remedial or behind, and I don't want to do that to her. I would wait until she's out of elementary school, and then we can look at, you know, where her standing is in a middle school standing, because I think it'll be different. I think her development will be different. I think that transition between elementary school and middle school, she'd have more time to effectively re-pick up what it means to spell and things like that in English. She still can read in English, she speaks English, but when it comes to spelling, it's a little tricky. Like, she wrote me a note the other day, and it was so cute. She was like, you know, when you get a minute, can you do this? And she spelled minute M-E-N-I-T. It's adorable, but being that she's in the third grade, they would say, well, she can't spell. I'm like, no, it's not that she can't spell. Her phonetics are French-based, which is not English. Like, it's not going to work the same. So because of that, the girls are with their mom in Columbus. I try to see them at least once a month. Going to Columbus, but for the last two weekends, they've come out here to take part in different events. We had this amazing signature event called Perryville, which is a celebration or observation of Earth Day. And we kind of played up in the storytelling idea that it's a time of magic, of renewal, and fairies come out and are looking to be rehoused from their hibernation in the winter. And so we have a competition where people can build fairy houses and win, like, actual money for their creations. And I saw some amazing pieces that were submitted. And even my girls got into it. They submitted two pieces themselves, and it was a great time. Great time. They dressed up in costume, had fairy wings, were walking around. There was a fair out here on the town square. Like, it was phenomenal. So those, like, family things are a little tricky, but, you know, the overall is that, if I'm being honest, like, financially, I am in such a better place that I was back home. Like, I can send money back home and help take care of things back home better than I could when I was there. So it just kind of helps out in a lot of ways. And I'm very fortunate that, you know, we live in a time period that we do, where technology is what it is. I FaceTime all the time. So it's, in a lot of ways, like, I am still there, but I'm not there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So, gotcha.
Big moves. Though.
Yeah, but that's something that you worked very hard to get, and obviously are very proud of the fact. And you know, you deserve all the accolades, man, that you get.
Thank you. The biggest thing that I was afraid of was that taking this position was going to stop me from moderating. And I've been very fortunate that my contract with Fan Expo has been upheld, has not changed. So I still do that in addition to my full time job. So it's been fun, because all the people that I'm meeting here in Noblesville, you know, they're meeting me as deputy director, and that's fantastic. I'm very proud of that. But then we get to talking about, like, what other things do you do? And I'm like, well, you know, I'm kind of big on the Comic-Con circuit. And they're like, what does that mean? And I'm like, well, you know how there's famous people that go to Comic-Cons? And they're like, yeah. I was like, I interview them for the show. And they're like, how famous? And I'm like, pretty famous, like a couple people. And, like, I have mentioned that I've shared the stage multiple times with cast members from Twilight, and apparently that's a big deal out here. Like, that's huge, actually. And it's been a hilarious sort of thing, where people start asking me questions like, well, have you ever met someone from here? And my first answer is always like, yes. And, like, I'll pull up a picture and I'll show them, like, oh my God, you're famous. And I'm like, no, I'm just deputy director. That's all. Like, just relax. Like, it's cool.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit about some projects of yours. And the one that I'm really interested in, and I kind of skimmed a little bit on your Facebook page there to get a little bit of an idea, but tell us a little bit about Dare to Compare.
Oh, man. Okay, so Dare to Compare is kind of a long story, all right? So bear with me on this one. Where it started was years and years ago, one of my best friends, Mike Watson, and I were working on his flagship title, Hotshot. And at the time, we're talking 2008, 2009-ish, that time period. We held in high regard the comic book series Invincible that everyone else is just now learning about because of the TV show. We were fans of the comic like a long time ago. And so because we were fans of it, we wanted to challenge ourselves and really kind of, you know, elevate our own work by daring to compare our work to Invincible. And we had mixed results in terms of success. We actually got yelled at by Eric Larson, one of the founders of Image Comics, creator of Savage Dragon. That's a funny story. I won't bore you with that one, but just know, like, we touched a nerve, and it was great. But that kind of was something that we just kind of wanted to do to kind of, you know, challenge ourselves, elevate ourselves with the intention of saying, like, hey, this is who we recognize as the best. We want to get there, so we're going to compare ourselves directly to them. Earlier this year, about in February, a good friend of mine, YouTuber Rob Jefferson, he's got a great channel called Comics Explained. He was asked why, specifically for Black History Month, he didn't cover a particular imprint of comics. He didn't cover Milestone. And flat out, he was like, well, I'm not really a fan of Milestone. And he gave his, you know, his reasoning rationale as to why he wasn't. And it caused a huge storm for him. Like, people are like, how could you say this? You know, as a Black man, you're supposed to love it. And it was bad. Like, it really just was bad. And in a lot of ways, I was offended because there's this whole argument that he doesn't cover Black comics. And he's covered at least one of my books. And he's mentioned me a bunch of times in his videos because we talk and he'll run ideas, you know, by me, and he'll mention it on his videos. So when people are saying, like, well, he doesn't support, you know, Black comics or Black indie comics, I'm over here waving my hand like, do I not count? Like, first of all, I'm the hardest working man in comics, sir. And number two, definitely Black dude. So I don't understand why this thing is happening. And so in the midst of that, there were a lot of other pockets of Black comics that were kind of clashing. And it became this weird sort of thing where it was more about ideologies and political standings versus the material on the page. And it kind of got to me where, again, as I'm trying to be a leading voice in things and I'm trying to, you know, redirect exactly, like, where's our focus at right now? Like, the world itself can already be a contentious place. Comics is supposed to not be that. It's supposed to be a safe place. But I understand, like, the need for, you know, some competitive edge. So I started doing, you know, I brought back Dare to Compare. Let's bring this back to the work itself. Let's not try to make these personal attacks at people behind the scenes. Are they any good at comics? Like, that's really what I care about. I don't care who you voted for. I don't know, would you vote for me as one of your favorites in comics? And I'm sure that there's some people like, well, that's just kind of scapegoating. Okay, if you want to look at it that way. I'm not saying that I agree with a lot of, you know, ideological oppositional thoughts. What I'm saying is that ultimately the thing that matters to me is my skill as a craftsman in the you know, form of making comics. If we're not talking about that, then who cares? Like, you're not going to change that person's mind. They're not going to change yours. But can I write a better book than you? Can I produce a better book than you? If I can, that's the thing that you have to look at. That's the thing that's going to matter, because that's the part that's actually going to last. And so that's what Dare to Compare is really all about. It's getting us back to put your money where your mouth is by way of the work. Not who you know, not what you think you know about this person. Is their work of you know, caliber? Is it of standing? Does it hold? Does it hit this four criteria that I outlined? Do people, you know, understand what it is? How do people feel about it? Let's get back to the work mattering more than any sort of side conversations.
Your other new project is called 8 Minutes.
I don't know if that's new.
Oh, that's not new?
No. In fact, okay, so it's so funny that you brought that one up. So 8 Minutes is not new. 8 Minutes is a project that I wrote and published in 2012. And it had a short run, super popular while it was out. And I have been meaning to do a volume two for more than 10 years. And I'm starting to get back into like thinking about what 8 Minutes is. And here's the premise of it. 8 Minutes is a series of vignettes. It's an anthology. It's 15 short stories where the concept is this. If the sun were to blow up right now, we wouldn't know for 8 minutes. And obviously the time that it takes for that energy to travel, for us to even see the flash, that energy behind it is too much. It would devastate everything. And so the concept is the sun has in fact exploded, and all of these stories take place within that 8 minute window. And the goal is to take mundane things, things that we don't care about, that we don't think about, that we don't even really acknowledge as important, and show like if they were the last times that it happened, that it would be the most important things to those people. And to kind of get us to think like, if these were our last 8 minutes, how do we make it matter? How do we make it, you know, something that really is impactful, which does kind of fit into the dare to compare kind of concept. But that's kind of been the thing, is that this is a project that I want to revive in a real big way. One, by bringing a second volume, and then by opening it up to other people to write their own 8 minute stories.
And it's kind of got some topicalness to it, not wanting to, you know, again, stir up the hornet's nest, right, but, right? You know, there's got some topical themes to it, we'll say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very much so. I mean, there's one story that is outright true. Like, this is a true story. I kid you not. There was a guy, like, I lived in an apartment, and I can't remember why he was out of school, but my youngest son was out of school. He was with me, and I was in this apartment. And there was a guy fishing through the trash, and it was raining and it was cold out. And this poor guy, I mean, his nose was running, and he didn't even have the sense of self to wipe his nose. And here he is going through like this big giant, like industrial dumpster looking for food. And I had just made lunch for my son and I, and didn't eat like the leftovers for dinner that we had the night before. Like, I made a totally separate lunch. And the juxtaposition of that, here I am, you know, this dad in a nice warm environment with my son making a totally separate lunch from the food that I could have had. And here's this other guy, and I don't know his standing. He could have been a father. He could have been anything. I have no idea. But he's digging through essentially our collective trash, this entire apartment building's collective trash, trying to find food. And I took the remainders that we had from the night before, and I took that out to him. And just gave it to him, like, hey, like, you don't have to dig through the trash, my man. Like, here, take this, get you something to eat. You know, is there somewhere that you can go to, you know, dry off or whatever? And he's like, yeah, I'm gonna go to the library. Okay, cool. And gave him the food, and he leaves. And just kind of like that dichotomy of an interesting sense of security that I had versus him, and the lesson that, you know, inherently I'm trying to teach my children. Is when you have enough and you see somebody without, you give to them. You make sure that you are the blessing that they need in life, because you've been blessed plenty of times, because look at where you are and look at where you're not. And again, if that was the message that I got across, and then all of a sudden, you know, all things are gone, that's a great way, you know, in my mind, to go out. So there's a lot of very topical things in that I know a lot of people are like, well, that's not right. You know, he made his choices. He's digging through the trash for reasons. No, I don't care what his reason is. No human being should have to do that. Be mad at me if you want to. Like, that's how I feel.
All right, let's talk about your catalog. You have a lot to get to here. So let's maybe hit the highlights here. The Samaritan, I know, is one of your most popular, is that fair to say, most popular books?
Yes, I can totally agree with that. I can absolutely agree with that. This is the first one. That's the first one that really kicked off the imprint. Came out in 2011. So again, this past March, celebrated its 15th anniversary. And in terms of iconic covers, I think it rates really high. That number one issue, big shout out to Lindsay Rogers, a fantastic fine artist from Columbus, Ohio, that I went to school with. She did this great rendition of actually my stepfather, who was holding this sign that says, "Will save the world for you," a play on, again, I guys have a thing about homelessness, playing on that concept of will work for food. She did a beautiful charcoal rendition of my dad, and that's the front cover, both of the first issue and the trade paperback, because it was that good. But the great thing about The Samaritan, in my opinion, is it's a commentary on what I think is our place in terms of social responsibility to the world that we exist in. The first person that's saved is a child who should never be held responsible for the world that they're brought into. But then everybody else, as you progress through the story, has a growing sense of responsibility to the turmoil that is their lives. You know, there's a drug addict that gets the option of, you know, being put into rehab, and when it doesn't go right, well, then you made your choice. And then there's a domestic violence situation where there is a sense of empowerment by stating that there is a choice and how that's, you know, played out. So The Samaritan has definitely been a book that, you know, for the longest time has like captured the imagination of people in a great way, and I'm very, very proud of it. Big shout out to Ren McKenzie, who did the first 7 issues, and then shout out to Jean-Paul Deschamps, who did the 8th issue, which is a bridge to a sequel series that is not out yet. I owe so many people apologies for that. But I'm still working on that particular story of how do you carry on that mission? How do you carry on that mission without the figurehead that started it? And really kind of look at that again in the sense of responsibility to communities. What happens when the person that started a movement is no longer there? How do you pick up the pieces? How do you keep it moving? I think that's a very viable conversation. In a lot of different ways. I don't want to get political, but, you know, in a lot of different arenas, you know, the political leaders that I grew up with aren't here anymore, or are aging out of effective communication or things like that. So there's got to be a way that we start talking about how to pick up that baton.
Well, and The Samaritan would certainly be maybe more adult oriented.
Oh, yes. Very, very much so.
Whereas Origins Unknown, kind of more for the young adolescent. Am I correct on, is that a correct statement?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's definitely more teen-centric, and you are kind of going down the timeline, which is perfect. Origins Unknown, and it's funny too, because like for that one, Origins Unknown is what I usually like recommend to people who have never experienced any of my writing whatsoever, because it's a series of short stories that end in a cliffhanger. And if I can get you interested enough to keep, you know, reading my work, that is not a whole story. Like I tell you up front, it's not a whole story. It is basically the first act of something where these characters discover a hidden secret or heritage about themselves that's going to change their fate and possibly the fate of the world. If I can hook you in that, then the goal is, well, what else would you like to read from me? Because there's other stories that I have, but this is just kind of the theme of this particular story. And what's funny is, like, this is, again, one of those, you know, you have one of those ideas in your early days as a writer, and you're like, one of these days, let me get to this. And I remember pitching it. I was at a party, my very first like Wizard World 2004 party, 2004-2005. And you know, I'm in this place. You know, I'm not supposed to be there for sure. I knew somebody who knew somebody that got me in, and like Jim Lee had walked by. I'm like, oh my god, that's Jim Lee. And I'm talking about this story concept. And another buddy of mine was like, that's not real. Like, you know, you're not really writing that. So like, this was one that like I had to write, because this was like the first time someone I knew had doubted whether I was serious about my craft. And for it to come out, 2011 was when we started that one at the end. I was very proud of that. And, you know, it started off with 3 short stories, Breaking the Habit, Points of Authority, and Somewhere I Belong. I was a big Linkin Park fan and named those stories after it. It was fun to kind of like get those things started. Big shout out to Jacob Newell out of Dayton, who did the artwork for those, as well as the follow-up 3, which is Pursuit of Happiness, No One Believes Me, and I Make Her Say. I was in my Kid Cudi phase. This is all about music for that particular one. I don't know why. Maybe it's the teen like idea in me. But what I've really appreciated, though, is that like in the process of writing those 2 titles in particular, The Samaritan and Origins Unknown, this was the time period where Vantage In-House was just about exploring stories that I wanted to tell. And there was no connective thread between it. As more work came out, the challenge came up to me of, well, are these things connected? And I started writing with the intention of, yes, they're standalone stories, but if I want to connect them, can I do it? And that began like the path that is what I call now the household of Vantage In-House titles that again, if you read them in a certain order, or if you just read the whole thing, you can kind of map how they actually are connected and create like a timeline that you can, you know, literally read through, through Vantage and House Histories, which I'm very, very excited for more people to experience. That's there are so many wonderful things that are coming out that are going to help bridge that. The next big one, of course, no, I want to give that away to
you. You're going to tease us like that?
Yeah, I'm going to tease just a little bit. Jeez. I'm going to get there. We'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get there.
Well, let's talk about The Trouble with Love, which I did not know. I did not know you had a sequel to called Never Too Late.
Yes, indeed. So The Trouble with Love, and this is the funny part, in the order, like when I write the book about Vantage and House, people are going to find this so fascinating. The Trouble with Love was actually supposed to be our first project. It's what I wrote first before I wrote The Samaritan. And it's 27 pages. Like, that's it. But it's a one shot. So it's a done in one. You get this, you know, you get this story, you read it, boom, that's it, you're done. It took a little time for the artist Harold Edge to finish the line work. And it was worth every second I waited for it. Because what Harold did was he captured this story that is very personal to me. Like, I don't want to give that part away, but just know, like, it's a very personal story. The concept is Apex Prime is the world's greatest superhero, essentially Superman. And he's got a wife and a kid, and then he falls in love with someone else. And years later, his son comes to him and goes, "Dad, why did you leave?" And he has to explain that, you know, for all the powers that he has, the one thing that he can't fight is love. You know, he fell in love, and there was nothing he could do to fight that. He tried, but it just didn't, like, when you are truly in love, how do you stop that? What do you do? And it was such a great experience as a writer, because despite the fact that it's superhero based, it's not a fights and tights story. It's a conversation. It's a very, you know, dramatic father-son conversation. I liken it to, and what a perfect day for us to talk about it, if Vader and Luke had a conversation, more so than just, you know, "Oh, you killed my dad." "No, I am your dad, and let me tell you how I got here to the dark side." It's very difficult, like, for us as the viewers to have the same understanding from Luke's perspective that his father was truly the bad guy. He goes to the dark side because I had visions of your mother dying, and I was trying to stop that from happening. And everywhere else that I turned that was good, they were like, "Nah, you can't do that. You shouldn't even have a wife. Like, that's wrong." And the only people that were like, "Yeah, no, you can save her and we'll show you how," they were lying, but was the bad guy. So I was literally trying to do what I could out of love, and it led me down this path that, you know, was tumultuous and kind of violent and bad. But I was doing it for good reasons. I promise it was for good reasons. It wasn't for personal gain. It wasn't just for my own glorification. I was trying to find the power to save your mom. And I think if that's a conversation that him and Luke have, there's a very strong chance that him and Luke take over the galaxy. Like, that's, maybe it's just me, you know, may the force to all of you, but I think that that's a very interesting concept. So to have a father-son dynamic in storytelling like that, again, reaching all the way back to the Dare to Compare, Invincible is such a huge inspiration for me that I can definitely see, like, Apex Prime being a play off of not just Superman, but Omni-Man himself, and having a conversation with Invincible about why he made the choices that he made. And it's like, the impact of Invincible, I cannot understate or oversell. Like, it is literally one of my favorite, like, comic book pieces of all time. Big shout out to Robert Kirkman. Shout out to Corey Walker and Ryan Otley, who brought together that masterpiece. But you are absolutely right. It does have a sequel called Never Too Late. And Never Too Late, I think, is probably the biggest piece of the puzzle that shows that all of these stories are actually connected. It has cameo pieces, and it's setting the stage for a huge crossover that I have teased via my newsletter and things like that. Do you want to know about it? You want to hear what that is?
Yeah, let's hear it.
I've determined that the return of Smith from The Samaritan, a fan favorite character. Again, like I said, I've owed people more stories featuring Smith for a while. Smith will return in a crossover event called No Win that will pit him against Apex Prime, my Superman analog from The Trouble with Love and Never Too Late series. It is going to be a brutal, brutal fisticuffs story about, again, when the, you know, unstoppable force meets the immovable object, what do they do? And I cannot wait to tell this story. I've already started mapping it out. I'm into the second issue right now, and it will pull threads from so many other stories, and it's just an absolute delight in writing.
Oh, that's awesome. That's good stuff. So let's talk about another comic that I'm not familiar with. Let's talk about Safeguard.
Oh, okay. Safeguard is a new one. So Safeguard is kind of one of those things where when you are a fan of comics like I've been, you tend to do things where you do your version of certain things. I have my version of Superman. Safeguard, inarguably, would be my version of the Justice League or Avengers. What is fun is I have stories featuring Safeguard in different time periods, right? Because it's a lineage style or legacy style team. And the first version of the team is going to make their debut in a series called Timeline that I'm doing with Dan Dougherty. And it's one of the next short stories that he's going to be doing with me. We've done two of that series so far. And Timeline, as a point of reference, because, you know, I've started to connect all the different stories between the Vantage and House, you know, shared universe, there are short stories in between that I know I'll never actually get to, right? Like, I'm one person, one man, one sound, writing all of this stuff. So through Timeline, what I decided was I would do little pocket stories, little, you know, little things that kind of say, okay, this is why this happened, or this is what leads to this thing. And there's the opening to how Safeguard starts, where essentially our Batman puts it together. And it's a great sort of nod to, you know, that Silver Age-y feel of comic storytelling. And in addition to that, it's also a great challenge for myself, where the way that I made up the team initially, each of the characters represents a style of comic storytelling. So Apex Prime, who's on the team, represents superheroes. We have the Wonders, so Dr. Wonder and Mrs. Wonder, they represent science, the sci-fi style stuff. There's a robot called Deploy, he represents technology. There's the Statesman, who represents espionage. And then you have the Night Watchers, who are more crime-oriented, so very, you know, Batman family-coded characters there. And so the way I wanted to tell these stories is it's pairing different groups, right? So it's not like everybody jumps in to fight, you know, big problems or anything like that. It's like, okay, if we take Prime and superheroes, what's a story that, you know, pairs those two things together and has the Night Watcher team and Apex Prime, you know, answering a call? And because I love, you know, short stories, because I think that they make you a better storyteller, right? Like, if you can tell a short story, if you're given more room, you understand, like, that's just a series of short stories to tell a really long story. So I always try to, like, hone my skill and my craft by telling really tight short stories. And so this is, these are 4-page stories that basically start at the tail end or the beginning of the third act, right? So, like, you know, something has happened. Here comes a moment of decision-making, and now we're dropping you into the story. And you just, you know, you see how that happened. And it's just a series of shorts. It's kind of like the greatest stories ever told of the Justice League, but I call it the greatest stories never told of Safeguard, because it's just going to be a fun sort of exploration of the team's iterations through time and seeing, you know, them, how they interact. You know, we have had one major showcase of Safeguard in the series Point of Authority Family Ties, which is the sequel to Origins Unknown Points of Authority. And we have a different iteration of Safeguard in it than what the version that I was just talking about. So I'm really excited about the idea of building all of these things.
Well, let's talk about another project of yours called The Wonders of the Weird and Beyond.
Yes, yes. I don't even know when this idea came about, but I've been a fan peripherally of the Fantastic Four for a very long time. And Wonders of the Weird is kind of my love letter to that. It's a quartet family, Dr. Wonder, Mrs. Wonder, and their two sons, Young Wonder and Kid Wonder. And the fun thing for me is that they don't have powers. So unlike the Fantastic Four, they're just, like, really awesome at who they are, but they're not, like, empowered. So, like, Dr. Wonder, of course, in a very, you know, coded Reed Richards sort of way, is a super genius and has discovered and created and invented so many wonderful things. Through him, I have, you know, established kind of this idea of an open source multiverse that he has discovered a series of planets that have these varying, you know, storytelling effects that I basically am offering to the greater like publishing community to say, like, if you have a locale that you need, you know, for your story to take place in, and you're like, ah, I want it to be kind of like this. If that's one of the worlds that he has discovered, you can use it. Like, just have at it. The idea of like a battle world or a place where when you go there, everything is kind of cartoonish, or there is a world that there are a bunch of zombies, because those are pop cultural, you know, things. And I think that it's kind of funny that we haven't had Reed Richards essentially discover something like this and go, hey, this is out here, and I just want to keep track of it. Like, that's all. I know this is out here. I just want to keep track. And other people can use it in their own storytelling ventures, because that's just kind of fun. Mrs. Wonder, she is like the world's greatest combatant. She has mastered fighting on like a total planetary, interplanetary level. Like, she's actually studied other like extra-dimensional, extra-terrestrial fighting styles. Like, she's that mom. Like, I will beat you up and there's nothing you can do about it. And it's just amazing. Young Wonder is brilliant in his own way, because he's like the world's greatest detective. He's smart in a way that his dad is not. And that was one of the things that I really love playing around with. I have a upcoming story in issue 2. I'm going to spoil it a little bit. It's called Father's Day. And in it, Dr. Wonder, who is, again, this famous genius or whatever, is visiting his dad on Father's Day. And the thing that they always do is they play a game of chess. But despite his genius, Dr. Wonder cannot beat his father in chess. He can't think in the structured way that you need to in order to play chess. Like, he's just not good at it. He has discovered, like, he's proven Santa Claus is real, but can't beat his dad at chess. And the greatest part about the end of that story is when he comes home, his Father's Day gift is a note left by his oldest son that says, "Don't worry, Dad, you'll get it next year." And it's a series of instructions for chess moves. The idea is that not only did his son already know his dad was going to lose, he knows how to beat his grandfather at chess and can predictively say, like, in a year's time, you're going to do these things and it's going to beat him at this game. And this is my gift to you. So it's like those little kind of like heartwarming, cool stories mixed with a bit of adventure. Kid Wonder is like the world's greatest pilot. Like, he's got a crazy, really high equilibrium. So he's like an acrobat, but also a dynamic pilot. Has test flown a bunch of things as like a little kid that, you know, other people would never try, but he's like, no, I can do this. Like, my hand-eye coordination is point, you know, is like super high. Like, I got this. And so they are a family of adventurers. And for them, again, because I love this short story format, taking advantage of the idea that I'm not doing ongoing series, I'm doing short form limited series, but I try to give you as much content as possible within that. So every issue will have like a character like led short story that's like 4 pages, and then a bigger piece of a puzzle that's like 8 pages. So like the first issue, each of the 4 characters got a four page short, and then there's an 8-page bigger story that will continue all the way through issue 3. And just finding different ways to kind of like share fun stories with them has been like the coolest thing ever. They are coded after my sons, which is also fun. And then my daughter's mom is coded in there. Their mom is kind of coded in there too, actually. So it's kind of a love letter to my own family, is just kind of saying like, hey, you guys have been very important to me. And these are interesting ways that I can kind of commemorate what our relationships have been. I think there's something deep rooted in me that is all about like family as a storytelling concept and how important it is, father-son relationships and all these different things. So it's huge in The Trouble with Love and Never Too Late. It's big in Points of Authority, Family Ties. Definitely huge in Wonders of the World and Beyond. And again, the Wonder family kind of sets the tone for some other things that happen in the shared universe, you know, abroad. The parents are part of Safeguard. The sons become a part of Safeguard in their own time and iteration. In fact, Point of Authority, Family Ties, they are in that version of Safeguard that we see. They're older, they're grown up. And what's really cool is that their dad makes a cameo in that story. And like, that's kind of when you see like, oh my God, that's who that is. Like, it's one of those fun sort of like, if you catch it, it makes you feel like, oh, now I understand who all these people are. And there's this growing thing of connectivity between it all, which is, it's the best part of what I'm writing these days. Like, I love finding all the different ways that I can say that this thing touches this thing, which is touching this thing, and don't forget that other thing because that's about to show up.
All right, let's talk about a couple more real quick before we start wrapping things up. The one that I think is probably the most ingenious that you have is the Wonder Care Presents the Kindergartians.
Yes!
Because as you described it once to me, you said it's Muppet Babies meets the X-Men.
Yes. It's a school for kids. I got in trouble for this. Well, not really got in trouble, but I wanted to get in trouble. I used the phrase, the school for gifted youngsters. And someone's like, you can't say that. I'm like, no. It's the Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters that is the X-Men specifically, but a school for gifted youngsters, that's just a statement about what a specialized school could be. So you can't trademark that. But the idea of these young kids with powers going to a school to learn how to become the heroes of tomorrow, I think is just a quaint thing, right? When it came to my publishing ventures, commingling with my teaching through my You Create Comics line, which thank you for your support of that. I recognized that like a lot of the stuff that I was writing for a while was not like elementary school age friendly. And I needed something that would not only showcase my abilities as a writer and publisher, but were coded for that elementary school level entrance. And the Kindergartians, big shout out to Justin Castaneda for being the perfect partner and collaborator and bringing that together. That one is arguably, I think it's my biggest, no, I take that back. It was my biggest series going. It has 10 issues. Page count wise, it might be up there. It's between that and Never Too Late in terms of the biggest. I think they're both close to 100 pages each in terms of their run count. But there was so much fun that we got to have in this. I mean, the Muppet Babies angle was like a huge piece of the puzzle where you have that like Silver Age-y dynamic where anything is possible. And you just tell stories with that level of unrestraint, like kid energy. And the things that you come up with are insane. I think, I know the third issue is Justin's favorite. It's called Beware the Kidnapper, where there is the physical manifestation of a sleep monster named Snooze that is stalking the kids during nap time. And they're trying to fight it off. But again, like you can't fight sleep. Even if you have superpowers, like you learn, like you can't fight sleep, like he's gonna get you. And so that's like it's so fun. I think my favorite, like that one was a big one for me. But I think my favorite now is Show and Tell, which took a thread. This is so crazy. So like we did the issues, and as we were doing the issues or in between doing the issues, we wanted more content for the Kindergartian, so we came up with a comic strip. So it was called Wonder Care After School. And it started off with like knock knock jokes that we would do. And they're super cute, super fun. But then we got the idea that we could use a comic strip as the lead in for the next issue of the series. And one of the comic strips that we did was the kids trying to figure out their teacher, Miss Terry, trying to figure out her origin story. And so that started a thread where the kids are trying to figure out like, who was she? Like, we know she was a superhero, but who was she? And all of their attempts pull up nothing. Like they even try to go to the school like computer system and it's locked out and they can't see it. So we did a free comic book day issue, which I just shared on my Facebook page. So please go to that. It's free. You can read it all. Where they use some dimension hopping and they come to a book signing that Justin and I are at, and they ask us what her origin story is. Like they're totally cheating and asking us what her origin story is. And we have to admit that we didn't know because we hadn't come up with one yet. And so the solution is, why don't we come up with one with you guys? And so that's how the story is that we're working with the kids, each one individually, to come up with their own version of an origin story for the teacher. The seventh issue, Show and Tell, are those stories that we came up with.
Okay.
And that's... like the meta of it all is so fun because each one has like a different style and vibe. Like, what was it? The one from Horace is drawn kind of in the tone of George Perez, and the Ultra Twins, Catherine Pollock, have a tone that's more like Jack Kirby style. Or is that, no, that's not Jack Kirby. Lechon's is Jack Kirby style. you got like Cub is in the version of like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, like the comic, like the 1980s comic. So it's a little dark and gritty and it's in black and white. Like getting to do all those fun things was just like an amazing sort of, fun little piece of meta storytelling. But then it ends in a huge sort of nod to the connectivity of everything, where one character does not actually get involved with telling the story. And the teacher admits, like, well, it wouldn't be fair for her to do so. And they're like, why? It's like, because she actually knows what my origin story is, because her great-grandparents started the school. And you find out, like, Wonder Care was created by the Wonders, and this little girl is the great-great-granddaughter of the founders of the school. And so because she has that connection to the long family history of things, she knows stuff that all the other kids don't know. And again, building those little threads of connectivity are just fun, man. I just love doing it.
Well, you teased us a little bit with a couple of projects that'll be coming down the pike, so to speak. Is there any other projects or maybe appearances you're going to be at or whatnot?
There's definitely another project. I got to give a shout out to Vantage. Vantage number one is going to be our flagship title. Number one is currently in production. Will Jones is on art. Kevin Anthony DeCastro, who is the returning colorist, who also did work with Points of Authority Family Ties, is doing the colors on this one. And this is like, if No Wind was a big statement about the connectivity of things, Vantage is a bigger statement. And this is a bigger move, a bigger story about identity and kind of discovering who you are and deciding, despite what you're told, who you can choose to be. And I am super excited for that one to come out. This one has been many years in the making and it looks beautiful. The pages that have come in so far are gorgeous. I think we're like 11 pages from being done with this first issue. And I cannot wait for folks to experience that one, because that will kind of be like the bigger piece where people go, oh my God, he had a plan the whole time. Like, if there was any statement that the MCU had a plan the whole time, this would be my version of that. And if it hits, I don't want to be super arrogant, but if it hits, that will be a big deal. Appearance wise, I'm going to be at pretty much every Fan Expo event possible through the rest of the year. The only challenge to that, of course, will be at the end of this month. We actually have two shows happening at the same weekend, Fan Expo Denver and Fan Expo Philly. And I wasn't sure which one they were sending me to. They are sending me to Denver. So I apologize to my Philly family. I'm not going to be out there. But Fan Expo Denver, I will be at Dallas, Edmonton, Toronto. I'm hitting all the greats. And we just announced a new one, Fan Expo Anaheim, that's going to be in June, corresponding with VidCon. So I will be, representing Fan Expo pretty heavy. I have my exclusive contract with them through 2027. And there are other shows that I will pop up at, obviously. But those are like the main ones that I'll be working at, that you can see my moderating skills. See me on stage with your favorite celebs.
All right. Well, where can folks keep tabs on you in terms of website and social media?
VantageInhouse.com is definitely the spot to check out all the works that we're talking about. You can definitely use Indie Planet. If you look up Vantage In-House or you look up Victor Dandridge, you can find all of my works that are on a print demand basis. I'm a big fan of them because what they make sure is that nothing is ever out of stock. The comic shop is always open if you go on the Indie Planet. So definitely check them out. Also look up Hardest Working Man in Comics. If you find me on Instagram, you can keep track of all the fun things that I'm doing. Vantage In-House on Instagram. And I've got to rebuy the You Create Comics site because apparently that just ended. And I wasn't paying attention because I got this new job. But we're going to rebuy that. We're going to upload a brand new site because I think it's time for a change for that one. So I'm super excited to show you guys what the new You Create Comics model is going to be.
All right. Victor, it's always a pleasure, man, to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm sorry you don't get to talk much when I'm on here, man. I run my mouth a lot.
Look, I've had enough to do behind the scenes here with all the technology, so don't worry about it.
Fair.
All right, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
my conversation with Victor, talking about the cool projects he's got going on, some of his cool projects from past years, and of course, talking about his new position there in Indiana. And you know what? I'm happy for Victor that he's got himself a pretty good opportunity in Indiana, and definitely you're going to have to keep tabs on him through his social media and his website for any announcements he might have about some of those upcoming projects that he teased. But for right now, maybe you want to let me know what you thought about this episode, and there's a couple different ways that you can get in touch with me. First, if you want to be old school, you can shoot me an email. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is the email address. You also can find me over on Twitter. Yes, I'm still on Twitter. The handle over there is @PVDMVP. You can also leave me a message over on the Facebook, Instagram, and Threads accounts. Just look for @PVDcast. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about the show. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that as well. First, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly and the best place to get every single new episode of the show. But it's also available through all those major podcasting outlets and apps. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcasting outlet or app and go to their search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And by the way, while we are talking about those outlets and apps, don't forget to rate and review. It pushes me up on the algorithm, which is super important for podcasters. And while you're doing that, subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. And there is a third and final way that you can hear every single episode, and that is through the Facebook page on Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where I do a live broadcast of the week's episode. So again, there's three places to get the PVDcast. PVDcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app. You can also hear it through the Facebook page on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you once again for checking out this edition, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2026.